Yes, I'm from Exeter University and very happy to be here and thank you for listening.
We need to speak up.
Subconsciously, we evoke memories and draw conclusions based on odour, taking pleasure in smells that entice us into a favourite bakery or to linger in a rose-laden garden, but trying desperately to avoid breathing in noxious fumes from rotten eggs or decomposing carcasses. Such examples exhibit strong and distinctive odours whose pungency our sense of smell cannot ignore. But human olfactory ability provides a lacklustre contrast to the macrosmatic or keen sense of smell enjoyed and employed by dogs, rats, pigs and bears, indeed by the majority of non-human animals, including, for example, turkey vultures and sharks. Evolution as human animals has reduced our scent detection ability, both in physiological structure and olfactory capability, and we now rely more on sight and hearing to perceive and achieve wanted goals. Aiken Young suggests the non-human animal has need to detect and respond adaptively to chemical signals, an ability that serves as the primary window to the sensory world for most animal species. But an acute sense of smell is no longer a primary human survival mechanism in contemporary society. There are exceptions, of course, such as the John Bradshaw commended olfactory abilities of perfumiers and wine tasters, whose professional noses may be highly insured for their commercial value to fragrance producers and vintners. However, odour signals in the wider world provide extensive information and evoke strong memories. They're a primary means of perception aiding a non-human animal's survival, whether in a rural landscape or in an urban household. Food and water, family, member or prey, shelter and territory, migratory pattern across Africa, or quickest route to the best mate, all present odours that can be detected and identified through the sense of smell. The exceptional canine ability for highly accurate odour perception, together with dogs' sometimes surprising propensity to like the company of humankind, amazes me, has become appreciably useful to us in the search for illicit drugs, landmines and other explosives, for the conservation of wildlife and the retrieval of bodies buried by landslide, avalanche or collapsed building. An additional value is now being explored through biomedical research, whereby canine olfactory prowess in the field of odour detection and differentiation is co-opted not only for the non-invasive detection of early stage cancer symptoms, but also to benefit human health and well-being within the socially and physically limiting boundaries constructed by chronic illness, particularly type 1 diabetes. This is a medical condition in which the immune system views its own cells as alien, resulting in destruction of the body's insulin-producing beta cells in the pancreas. Generally, insulin production lets glucose enter the cells of the body to provide energy and maintain control of blood sugar levels. However, in type 1 diabetes, insulin can only be obtained through injection or infusion, resulting in a continual struggle to maintain the correct balance in blood glucose levels, which fluctuate according to diet, stress, barometric pressure, exercise, and the list goes on. Internationally, positive results are emerging from ongoing scientific research and development technologies in this field. For example, work on types of artificial pancreas, pump therapy, and the creation of personal stem cell-derived beta cells. But 10% of the 3.5 million people known to have diabetes in the UK have already been diagnosed with type 1. And this compels them to spend every day of their lives practicing the mechanics of care and conducting stringent treatment regimes using whatever method is currently available to them. That they will look forward to new health technologies is not in doubt, but survival in the here and now is the primary objective of those currently coping with the complexities of this chronic illness. Considerable diligence and expertise are required constantly throughout the life course to ensure exact amounts of insulin are absorbed, so as to gauge and balance alterations caused by food and alcohol intake, stress factors, weather changes, or complications from additional health issues that plague people with autoimmune illnesses. Type 1 diabetes can travel through generations, is frequently diagnosed in very young children, and unlike type 2 diabetes, appears unrelated to lifestyle behaviours. Olfactory detection of fluctuating blood sugar levels in people with type 1 requires a highly sensitive discernment of what is right and what might be going wrong within a human's corporeal chemistry. People who've lived with this illness from childhood may lose the ability to recognize symptoms of an onset of hypoglycemia, a drop in blood sugar levels that may cause dizziness and confusion, then unconsciousness and possible coma and death if left untreated. My multi-species ethnographic research explores human canine coexistences, found on the latter's acute scenting capability. The smell of changing scent signatures, the volatile organic compounds, or VOCs, emanating in this instance from the breath exhaled by those with type 1, disturbs the usual odor pattern recognized by the medical alert dog, who then warns the human partner of a likely hypoglycemic event. Had to bring my cat in. A dog can retain scent-laden air so that odor absorption is enhanced, enabling accurate detection and discrimination. An alert can be given up to an hour before an episode that might cause human unconsciousness, so the dog's keen olfactory perception of the human companion's altering chemistry can enable scenting and warning of blood sugar levels dropping well before the risk of collapse. Having detected an extreme fluctuation in blood sugar levels, the dog may nudge, nibble, stare, paw, whine, scrabble to alert the human companion. The dogs are trained to use an alert signal that's natural to them, but is also strong and firm enough to rouse a sound sleeper with fast-dropping blood glucose levels. If necessary, they will wake the parents of deep-sleeping children or bring medical kits to the bedside. Medical alert assistance dogs learn to give the practiced alarm signals to their type 1 partners when blood glucose levels rise or fall to unsafe concentrations, usually above 12 or below 4.5 millimoles per litre. This innovative co-embodied care practice allows sufficient time for the human with type 1 diabetes to test and check blood sugar levels and react accordingly at home or in public. And you can see what's happening there, the measuring of the blood. Children can play football knowing their canine carer will alert parents on the sidelines if their blood sugar levels are falling too low. And adults can shop without fear of collapsing in the supermarket when the dog recognizes the scent causing imminent hypoglycemia. The immediate consumption of, for example, calorie-laden jelly babies, Lucozade, glucose tablets or glucagel enables the rebalancing of carbohydrate to insulin intake. Members of the public attempting to assist a collapsing individual may erroneously believe that nothing sugary should be given to someone with type 1, but quickly absorbed carbohydrate intake is an important remedial treatment in such cases. Chocolate, although sweet, takes time to be absorbed, so is a slower means of recovery in an emergency. But back to the trained alerting dogs, whose skill in sensory perception result in human-canine partnerships that develop into symbiotic associations, displaying the gifting of care practiced by each member of the dyad and lead to harmonious coexistences within the limits constructed by type 1. Secure shelter, food and water, space to play and be played with are among the human gifts to the dog's welfare in return for the constant alerting assistance. Sociologist Rod Michalko's work, The Two-in-One, Walking with Smokey, Walking with Blindness, describes the becoming of a single multi-species identity between himself and his guide dog, a becoming of two-in-one, which is echoed in the deeply bonded relationships between the medical alert dog and the chronically ill human. The security given by the dog's sensitive detection of changes in odor encourages or renews human integration into society, highlighting the non-human species' capacity for warmth and concern for non-canine animals. Several participants have stated they never left home unaccompanied in case they collapsed in front of other people and became unconscious. But once they had a canine companion with a highly evolved sense of smell to give advance warning of a potential hypo, they began to walk in parks, woods and fields without human company, to travel with confidence and to converse with others in public places, instead of withdrawing completely from social events. While reward is key to maintaining the alerting dog's accurate and continuous scent detection, there is no doubt that the mutual and obvious care performed by each for the other invites comment and approbation from members of the public. However, an adult with type 1 diabetes who has a hypo and collapses in the vicinity of pub or restaurant may be labelled drunk and avoided when there's a genuinely urgent need for assistance and medical treatment. In such cases, an identity-jacketed dog barking or whining round the dizzy or unconscious human is more likely to attract attention and the active help of passers-by for the fallen companion. And I put how sadly fickle is our moral thinking, which I think it is. The canine element of this interspecies partnership is selected for temperament, problem-solving ability, curiosity, and a preference for searching by smell rather than searching by sight. Gadbois and Reeve, researching in Nova Scotia, found Border Collies to be the most successful breed in terms of advanced laboratory or field training because they are, quote, good and hard workers, motivated, persistent, good sniffers, and their attentional focus can be channeled, in most cases, very well, unquote. However, bring a chronically ill human into the picture, one who may suffer from mood swings, fatigue, and other complications adhering to ill health, and a Border Collie, constantly expecting attention and often stereotypically termed hyperactive, may not always become the ideal alerting assistant. As in other assistance dog associations in the UK, the Labrador numerically heads the medical alert dog group in terms of sniff ability and multi-species equanimity, while poodles, spaniels and their kindred cockapoos, brockers and labradoodles have proved more than equal to scent detection tasks. Cognitively, medical alert assistance dogs do not know that their human carers may be affected by hypoglycemia in, say, 30 minutes. They do not have knowledge of or foresight into the chemical workings of the human body. However, their trained alerting behaviour based on olfactory sensitivity to alteration in VOCs exhaled by someone with type 1 enables the provision of a visible precursor to an episode. As an example, I was interviewing someone with type 1 diabetes whose dog lay peacefully snoring very loudly under her chair while we talked. About 30 minutes into our session, the dog suddenly got up and stared at her, put a paw on her leg, then jumped up and licked her face. She tested her blood sugar levels and found them to be 23.5 millimoles per litre, far above the acceptable range, so he got a treat and she went off to eat and rebalance. The dog's alert predicted the possibility of hyperglycemia when blood sugar levels rise too high rather than drop too low. This dog had been trained to alert to both conditions in his human partner. And the dogs learned through reward, a tennis ball, favourite toy or particular food item, to recognise not only the usual odour of the human companion's VOCs, but also to recognise significant chemical changes that call for these alerting behaviours. And I'm sorry, Fred, I don't know how to pronounce the next name. Is it Curry Weil or Vile?
Weil.
Thank you. Suggests that training is not an anthropocentric exercise of power over an animal that depends on submission and obedience to a human-authored design, but rather is an intersubjective relation that demands openness to difference on both sides and an openness that can be transformed by difference. So matching human, non-human animal personalities is important, but a willingness to cooperate and change attitude and behaviour in both species is unequivocally essential. The Medical Dogs Detection Dogs Training Centre invites collaboration and cooperation between dogs and their prospective human guardians with chronic illness in order to facilitate an effective interspecies bond that will allow a mutualistic coexistence and human recognition of the dog's active expressions of concern. A trained dog will not be paired with a child or adult with type 1 diabetes unless visible signs of a future strong bond between them become apparent to the centre's staff, alongside the ability to detect and alert appropriately and willingly. My observation of the medical alert assistant dogs in training and afterwards in their working environments is underpinned by research into the canine olfactory system by, for example, Bradshaw, Craven, Patterson and Settles, Gadbois and Reeve, Helton and Adam McClosen. Craven, Patterson and Settles, and this is where I probably won't be as knowledgeable by any stretch as you, but I hope I'm all right, suggests that a dog can detect odorant concentration levels at 1 to 2 parts per trillion. And I've got here, think of a single drop of water and 2 full Olympic-sized swimming pools to picture the ratio more easily. I can feel this is embarrassing. These scientists graphically explain macrosomia through illustration of the dog's unique nasal airflow patterns, whereby spatially separated odor samples gained through sniffing, quote, may be used for bilateral stimulus intensity comparison and odor source localization, unquote. The researchers propose that mammalian olfactory acuity and function may largely depend on the transport of odors along these distinct airflow systems. Breathing in enables odor-laden air, the red lines, to be transported to the olfactory recess area of the nose, the sort of yellowish-brown color, while blue respiratory airways take the remaining airflow from the olfactory recess towards the nasopharynx, where it leaves the nasal cavity. The figure shown here, courtesy of Brett Craven, illustrates how the blue expiratory path lines from the nasopharynx, quote, let airflow bypass the olfactory recess during expiration, leaving behind quiescent or inactive scent-laden air, thus providing additional residence time for enhanced odor absorption, unquote. A look at the canine nasal airway reveals an olfactory recess excluded from the respiratory part of the nose by a bony horizontal plate. I don't know if you can read it, I hope you can. The lamina transversa, right central in the top picture. This anatomical feature is characteristic of keen-scented macrosomatic animals and influences olfactory airflow patterns and odorant transport. The dog's nasal cavity contains hundreds of millions of sensory neurons in the olfactory epithelium. This is a skin lining convoluted nasal turbinates, which are paper-thin spiral-shaped bones at the back of the nose. The canine olfactory epithelium provides an extensive area for odorant transport, a fact corroborated by Helton and McClosey, among other researchers, who've suggested the average dog has an olfactory epithelium of approximately 150 to 170 square centimeters, compared to the approximate, I've got 5 to 10 square centimeter olfactory epithelium in a human nose. The olfactory epithelium of a pig is estimated to extend to 300 square centimeters, nearly double the area of that of an average-sized dog. Looking at other non-human animals who are potent scent detectives, the giant pouched rats of sub-Saharan Africa are trained by the Belgian NGO Apopo to discover landmines by sniffing the scent of explosives and then alerting disposal teams by intense scratching at the site. These pouched rats are also becoming well known for their ability to detect early symptoms of pulmonary tuberculosis in sputum samples. Both forms of detection by the rats succeed in providing novel, low-cost, and highly successful additions to health and safety programs. Apopo's founder claims that the rats, who may grow up to 3 feet in length from nose to tail, quote, are capable of performing repetitive tasks endlessly in return for simple food reinforcement. Logistically, he suggests they're very convenient. They require a small space and little care and attention. They're also quite robust and resilient to tropical diseases. Unquote. Again, their training in scent detection is reward-based, and their success as mine finders can be attributed in part to them being too light in weight to trigger the mines they access. Returning to the scenting prowess of the canine species, sniffing is natural practice. Air is inspired and expired, both for olfactory purpose and for respiratory survival. Encouraging a dog to use its sense of smell to identify biomarkers of human disease through reward-based training appears advantageous to both species, particularly since mutualism is fundamental to their shared existence. Whether the outstanding olfactory ability of the pig could be aligned to biomedical diagnoses in the same manner that dogs or rats are trained to assist in medical detection hasn't been a question for this study, but future research into the scenting prowess and trainability of other macrosomatic species could lead to a broader resource base of animals specializing in the detection and discrimination of altered odor signals. However, if more widespread benefit is to be gained from non-human macrosomia, a multi-species interdependent set of care practices need to be engaged and performed, so that the welfare of each species is achieved within harm-free conditions and without ponderous anthropocentrism. The ability of macrosmatic animals to deliver increasing accuracy in the detection of illness at an early stage among human and non-human species could positively alter global mortality rates. It could also contribute to the economics intrinsic to good health systems, since the cost involved bypass the need for expensive technological infrastructures and could be of particular benefit to poverty-stricken communities living in extensive landscapes without mainstream transport, industry or welfare institutions. And I thank you very much indeed.